Good morning, everyone. It is 3:15 on the morning of October 2nd, 2012, wherever that is in infinity. I've just gotten back from the California trip. Actually, I got back a couple of weeks ago. The trip went really well. I met some wonderful people. It was really well planned. Everyone took very good care of me. Got to see some wonderful places. Some of the places that I used to hang out when I used to live in California. And as I said, got to meet some wonderful people. Got to see some old friends. I spoke in about 7 different places in California. It was really well received. Some nights I was speaking to people who had absolutely no prior knowledge of a non-dual perspective. And in other cases, I was speaking to people that had been investigating non-duality for 20 years. Sometimes I was in the country. Sometimes I was in the city. I spoke in Berkeley and West Los Angeles. And at other times in smaller centers, such as Ukiah or Sebastopol or Redlands. As I said, wherever I went, what I was saying seemed to be very well received. I was quite surprised, though, in a number of situations where I was speaking to people who had a very long history of investigating non-duality. It seemed as though a lot of what I was saying was a real surprise to them. And perhaps I'll get into that a little later in this response. So thanks for tuning in. As always, I want to express my appreciation to those who have written in, sending specific questions. I want to express my appreciation to those who have sent in donations. And as always, I want to express my appreciation to Marcus Fellows. Although I think he's now going by the name Napoleon Dynamite. So thanks to Marcus for establishing this website in the first place and for posting these responses each month. It's fall here in Manitoba, one of the most beautiful times of the year, actually. The light is a very rich amber color. The trees are golden and red. The weather is still quite warm, but the autumn winds are starting to strip the trees of leaves, so the ground is blanketed in all of these leaves, and every footstep has a crunch to it, the crunch of fall. I've had 5 questions come in this month, so let's get down to it. The first one reads, "Hello, Daryl. What is embodiment? What is your relationship with your own body on the day-by-day process of living?" So, I'm not sure what this person means by the word embodiment. I'm going to assume that it's, you know, I don't know where he's taken this word from, but I'm going to assume that it has to do with the notion of human beings taking on human form, taking on a body. So from, you know, what would be classically considered a non-dual perspective, we haven't actually taken on a body. The whole notion that there is a body is a fantasy. So if we don't really acknowledge the process that the body is in a very clear way, then we usually walk around with the feeling that the body is some kind of solid form and that it's inhabited by some invisible self that is moving this solid form through a world of other solid forms, and that somehow this body is influencing the general world of form in some way. And from the classic non-dual perspective, this is a fantasy. And we can perhaps get some sense of that by, if we're interested, we can maybe sit down at some point and do absolutely nothing and simply let the moment make itself obvious, let the body make itself obvious. And what we find is that instead of a solid lump that we would call a body, what we find is a process or an unformed dance of vibration, pulsation, breath coming and going, heart beating, warmth, coolness, tightness, looseness, heaviness, lightness. We have this event that we would call the body. And actually, in some cases, if this is, if this presents itself in a very subtle way, in a very nuanced way, it becomes very obvious that there's no real way of identifying any particular physical form. If we're sitting there with the eyes not focused necessarily on what we would call the body, then there is no real limit to this physical form. There's just the there's just the dance of the moment, the vibrations, the pulsations, the waves of energy, the warmth, the coolness, feelings of tightness, looseness, heaviness, lightness, heart beating, breath coming and going, moods, mooding, just all of the various activity that the body actually is. With the eyes open and focused on the what we would call the physical form of the body, there is this apparent form. But if we look at the apparent history of that apparent form, we can realize that at one moment we were an eighth of an inch long in our mother's womb, then we were maybe a foot long, then we were outside the womb, we were 2 feet tall, we were 4 feet tall, we were 5 feet tall, and at this point we're whatever height we are. The body has consistently grown older over the years, and in this moment it's consistently growing older, and at some point it will ultimately be horizontal and it will eventually turn to dust. If it was left just to the environment, it would turn to dust and it would blow away, this apparent form that we are. So embodiment is a misconception. From a non-dual perspective, in this moment, all that exists is a totally unformed, unexplainable happening. Whatever apparent form seems to exist is actually a movement, a dancing, mysterious event, a pulse and a tingle, a warming, cooling, sounding, silencing, lightening, darkening, pulsing, vibrating, trembling, tingling, happening that has no particular form. So So this person also asks, what is your relationship with your own body on the day-by-day process of living? So my own relationship with my body is probably very similar to your own apparent relationship with your body on a day-to-day basis. It seems like there's a body there, although it's very much the fact, in my apparent case, that it is acknowledged to be an event, always moving and shifting, never quite the same presentation in any two particular moments. The changing aspects of this apparent form are very obvious. And especially now at this age, I'm getting closer to being 62 years old, and all kinds of changes are occurring in this body, this apparent body. And it becomes even more obvious that it is an event that I don't have any ultimate control over. It presents itself in certain ways. There is this acknowledgement that it has an apparent form in this moment, but there is more underlying that, the sense that it is an actual event. This event presents itself as feeling quite wonderful on certain days and certain moments in the day, and other days it doesn't feel so wonderful. During the trip to California, everything was great. The moment I got home, there was a really wicked flu going around Winnipeg, and I was exhausted from the trip and promptly caught that flu. And all of that exists within this world of apparent form. This is ultimately the dance of a totally mysterious, unformed event. But there is this world of apparent form. So in the world of apparent form, the body took a trip to California, it returned, it caught the flu, it was bedridden for a number of days, and the flu left, and now everything's feeling quite fine. Within that dance of this unformed, unexplainable event, this apparent body, this apparent form, it has a survival mechanism, so there is an automatic, what we would call an automatic movement to protect this body in certain situations. And there is all the usual stuff of the so-called day-to-day world. There's feeding the body, there's cleaning the body, there's there's all of that, and it's all just very straightforward. It's all the very natural expression of whatever this great mysterious event actually is. Now, this same person has sent in a second note saying, "Hi, Daryl. The body is considered a key point in healing the mind by both the Vipassana tradition of S.N. Goenka and the new psychological paradigms like somatic experiencing. It seems that not many Advaita teachers consider its importance. Why is that? Also, what is your approach in dealing with fear, hatred, and bodily tensions? Thank you for answering." So, let's be quite clear what some of these traditions are actually presenting. So, in the case of an Advaita teaching, the bottom line within a non-dual perspective on life is the acknowledgement that everything in this moment is a moving, shifting event. Now, ultimately, there is no explanation for this event whatsoever, and any explanation is incorrect, because any explanation will be focusing on apparent forms and giving those forms a label of some kind. I've been through this in my books, and I've pointed this out in various talks, that these labels are simply meaningless sounds. You know, whatever sound we get for a certain apparent form in one country, in a different country that speaks a different language, it's a different sound. So these sounds ultimately are meaningless. They only take on meaning when they point to an apparent form. And we've discussed this many, many times, that forms are ultimately a fantasy. All of us will eventually say at some point that everything is changing. So all of these apparent forms are changing. They are in some way some kind of a dance, a vital moving and shifting, something that has no ultimate form. Now, so, you know, if we consider the body within a non-dual perspective, we're being asked to acknowledge that what we consider to be this lump, some solid entity that we call a body, some solid unchanging entity that we call a body, is in fact a very subtle and nuanced liveliness. It is an event that can't ultimately be classified in any way whatsoever. So we're being asked to acknowledge that all of the formations are not actually formations at all. They are an event. And this event, we don't have to worry about the event of the body or the event of life, because the event is presenting itself in the same way that an ocean presents its movement, or a cloud presents its movement, or a river flows the way it flows. It's simply happening all on its own. It's moving to its own nature. So this great, unexplainable, unformed event of this moment, and that includes the unexplainable, unformed event that we call a body, is simply happening the way it's happening. Now, on a day-to-day basis, that may seem to be a you with a body, a you that is addressing the body in a certain way, or moving the body through a world, an apparent world of other forms. And that world of formations, that is a false notion of existence. Again, this is just for your consideration. This is from what we would call a non-dual perspective. What would be classically known as a non-dual perspective. So that all of these formations that seem to exist, they don't actually exist at all. It's very much like the movement of a cloud, where we would see certain forms in the cloud, but we know that the cloud itself has no actual form. A cloud may look like a soldier at some point, but never for one moment would we believe that the cloud is a soldier. The cloud is an event that's happening all on its own, and it has no particular form. And so it is in this moment. It may seem to be a world filled with human beings, but all of that is changing. And ultimately, those particular forms will not exist. And from moment to moment, they are moving and shifting. They are never the same from one moment to the next. Even if they only change in a very subtle way, they're still changing. So ultimately, the event of this moment, this entire universe of this moment, has no particular form. And all the forms that seem to be presenting in this moment, they will be gone at some point. We all know that bodies apparently disappear. We all know that the climate is shifting. We all know that the planet itself is growing older. Scientists tell us that entire galaxies can be seen to blip out of existence. So all of these apparent forms are simply a mysterious unformed event, and that event is occurring all on its own. It's moving to its nature, and there's no way of saying what that is. It's simply unexplainable, it's simply unformed, it's simply happening on its own. So that's from this classic non-dual perspective. Now, if we look at the Vipassana tradition, and specifically the Vipassana teaching of Goenka, Mr. Goenka states very clearly that the moment-to-moment acknowledgement of the body is to see through or to break down the sankhara, or the sankhara is the Pali word for formations. So, and in my apparent past, I went on an apparent 10-day Goenka retreat, and the whole focus of that retreat was to see that everything in the moment is changing, and specifically, a very detailed exploration of the body reveals that the body is not solid. The body is an event. It is a pulsing, a tingling, a waving, a warming, a cooling, a tightening, a loosening, a heavying, a lightening. It is this moving, shifting, mysterious event. And in seeing that, you break down the various formations, or you see through the formations that seem to exist. And so in doing that, there is an acknowledgement that the usual views of existence are not the ultimate truth, and in that there is often what we might call a rearranging of relative views so that they somehow work more functionally with the event that life is. So on a day-to-day basis, instead of thinking of the body as a solid lump and the world to be a bunch of things, a bunch of formations, we can begin to simply acknowledge that all apparent things are movement or a process. And so we have these a relative viewpoint that now is dealing more directly with the totally unexplainable dance that this moment is. So even though these relative viewpoints that would then be looking at life as movement or a process, even though that description itself is still not the actual event, this new relative viewpoint is somehow more functional, or seems to feel more functional in relation to this totally unexplainable event. So actually Goenkaji is not saying anything different ultimately from the Advaita traditions, the non-dual perspective. Now, I don't really know anything about the new psychological paradigms that he mentions, and in specifically this one called somatic experiencing, but I can pretty much guarantee that it's working with that same basic principle, that if we explore the body, any of the somatic explorations, the somatic therapies, within that we come to take the focus off, the tight focus off the world of thought, and we come back to the fuller event of the moment, and that is approached basically by acknowledging the event of the body just as much as we're acknowledging the event of any of the thoughts. So there's an exploration of the body, the actual physical happening of the moment, and perhaps in acknowledging this larger physical happening of the moment, or including what we would call this physical happening of the moment, like the body, sound, the seeing, the hearing, the touching, the tasting, the smelling, as well as the thinking, we come to acknowledge the larger mysterious event of the moment, and we pull away from this tight focus that's always zeroing in on the world of thought and the world of stories, the world of explanation, in which we find a lot of contradiction and we find a lot of unnecessary fear. By tightly holding on to these stories as though they're the reality of the moment. And in this process of acknowledging the larger event of the moment, and doing so by simply acknowledging the event that we call the body, the physical event of the moment, the seeing, the hearing, the touching, the tasting, the smelling, as well as this other element, what we would call the mental aspects, the thinking, we come to acknowledge this larger event. And in that, there is a very basic rearranging of the sense of life to a greater or lesser degree. For some people, it just means they have a few mild insights. And for other apparent people, it may be that the totally unexplainable, unformed event that life is makes itself obvious. In all cases, whatever this is cannot be explained. It's just happening the way it happens. Now, this person has also asked what my particular approach is in dealing with fear, hatred, and bodily tensions. So, in the apparent days that I was dealing with those particular situations or those particular emotions, my particular approach was to explore these as clearly as I possibly could. And by that, I mean there was an urge to let these things... let's deal with these emotions first, the fear and the hatred. If there was fear presenting itself, there was an urge to let that present itself. It seemed to make sense in my particular case not to get rid of fear, but to really let fear go through all of its stages, and simply let it make itself obvious. It would to see that it presented in a certain situation, it presented in a certain way, it went through various changes, and then it melted away at some point. Now, from that, it became obvious that there were certain apparent fears based on certain notions that didn't have any validity, and so certain fears fell away. However, it was also the case that there were certain apparent fears that arose for no apparent reason. There was just a general sense of fear. And at a certain point, it just seemed obvious to stop calling it fear and to realize that it was just simply a physical happening the way it was happening. There was no way to understand it. It simply arose, it moved through its various expressions, and then it melted away. In the case of hatred, I've never actually experienced what I would call hatred, although I've experienced in the past a lot of frustration, and severe frustration is anger. Now, in letting that express itself, it became very obvious that within the world of apparent form, this frustration, this extreme frustration or anger would arise when there was a desire for life to be a certain way and it wasn't going the way that I apparently wanted it to go. And in things that I really wanted to be a certain way, when they didn't go the way I wanted it to, there was extreme frustration, and there I could lash out in anger. So in that process of letting it reveal itself, seeing basically when it presented itself, seeing it move through all of these different stages, apparent stages, and then melt away, it became very obvious that it was fundamentally based on wanting life to be a certain way. And in my apparent acknowledgement of life being a totally mysterious event, it also became very obvious that I don't have ultimate control over how life moves. It doesn't really matter what thought wants. Life moves in whatever way it moves, and that's it. That's basically all we get to deal with. So after a while, it just became absurd to want life to be something in particular. It is what it is. We get what we get. It plays out in whatever way it plays out. And in all of those situations, it seems as though we deal with it in whatever way seems appropriate. But in my particular case, it became less and less sensible to object to any of it. I mean, there are still moments where I just absolutely do not want life to be what it is, but it is what it is. So there's no problem. It just is what it is. And whatever it seems to be is moving on to something else. Now, this aspect of bodily tensions, when I was apparently younger, there could be a lot of tightness within the body. Again, that tightness within the body was some kind of physical response to the way life was presenting itself. There might be very aggravating situations. And not only on an apparent emotional basis did I not want life to be a certain way, it seemed as though I didn't, on a physical basis, I didn't want life to be a certain way. And so my jaw would clench in resistance. My shoulders would hunch in resistance. My stomach would tighten in resistance. But again, in simply letting life express itself the way it expresses itself, in my particular case, there was an urge to sit down and just let life make itself obvious. Let life make its movement obvious. Let life make its natural expression obvious. And in that acknowledgement of the movement of life, it became more and more obvious that life was going to present whatever it presented. Sometimes it presented very pleasant situations, but those pleasant situations always shifted in some way, and ultimately there would be at some point some extremely unpleasant aspect presenting itself, or maybe the whole situation would shift totally and become extremely unpleasant. And in the same way that it no longer made sense to wish that it was always pleasant, and so any kind of emotional resistance to that shifting made less sense. It also became obvious that this physical response of tightening in the face of everything, just, it made no sense. Now, along with that, there was an exploration of moving the body. You know, there are all kinds of movements that would let the tensions that apparently build up in the day release. So you could have things like yoga or certain stretching routines. There could be certain very specific relaxation techniques, physical relaxation techniques. And all of that was just simply life expressing itself the way it expressed itself. But in that, or along with that, there was this very direct, simple acknowledgement of the moment, the vibration and pulsation of the body, the apparent events of the moment, the way it very naturally presents itself, the moving, shifting event that life is, that the body is. And along with that was the acknowledgement that it was always presenting in one moment seemingly pleasant, and then in another moment it was unpleasant. And as that natural rhythm of life made itself more and more obvious, this movement from pleasant to unpleasant, back to pleasant, back to unpleasant, the ups, the downs, the confusions, the clarities, the anxieties, the moments of confidence, that as that shifting, moving event made itself more and more obvious, it became obvious that that was its true nature. There wasn't any need to resist it. It's just, as they say, you go with the flow. You ride the tide. You simply respond in the way that seemed to be most obvious, most appropriate, with this underlying sense that life is always going to present itself as these ups and downs, the pleasant and the unpleasant, the beatific and the horrific. That's just the way it is. And whatever it is, there's no way to explain it ultimately. Whatever it seems to be in this moment is on its way to something else. So that's all that's coming up in response to these notes. Let's move on to the next. Another person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. Thanks for reading this, and thanks for the books, the website, and the meetings in London a year ago. I've read and reread Dismantling the Fantasy and Essence Revisited. They are much clearer than anything else I've read on the subject of non-duality. I would say my way of thinking has sort of rearranged itself around your prose, which is quite odd, really, because I don't actually have a clue what you're talking about." "When I look at that now, it's obvious why, because it can't be described. So if I'm trying to puzzle out what this is, I can't do it. The question I had was about the idea of control, and this is a problem in the context of a long-term involvement in a style of Tai Chi that emphasizes using the mind, whatever that is, to direct a wave of energy from the feet up through the body to uproot another person. There is a big emphasis on taking control of your own body and thereby gaining control of your partner or your opponent's body. I have a great sense of disbelief about all this, but being very much within the practice and the technique, which seems to do what it actually says, I can't really see clearly what's happening. This Tai Chi style has quite a strong yogic flavor and emphasizes spiritual development, levels of awareness, an energy field around the body extending into, I suppose, the larger energy field of the earth. The aim is to go deeper, ever deeper. There seems to be a conflict there with what actually is, which surely doesn't have any levels. It seems like another story about having to be something different from what actually is. I don't know what actually is, but whatever I am, it seems to create a sort of sense of this is not true. Why would this idea of a mind or a body or a me acquiring this sort of control be so unconvincing? I would appreciate anything you might be able to say about this in terms of your own perspective. Everything around us seems to promote this projection of levels, and achieving more and more highly, or more and more deeply. As you say, a completely compelled world, but if there is no intrinsic meaning in any of it, it has to be a pantomime, and we're all a bunch of fools. It would be great if you disagreed with that last remark. With gratitude. All right. This brings up some nice points. So basically this person is saying that in listening to my talks, in reading the books, that he's saying somehow his way of thinking has sort of rearranged itself around the prose that I've offered. And he's come to acknowledge this unexplainable, unformed event of the moment. But now, in relation to this Tai Chi practice, it brings up certain contradictions, it brings up certain difficulties, because the Tai Chi practice is saying that we're someone separate from existence, someone that can develop a certain kind of control. And in this case, it's, you know, within this Tai Chi practice, it's to uproot the stance of another person. And this approach seems to be able to do what it's saying it's offering. But now this individual is having difficulty with this approach because, the whole idea of being someone separate from the event of the moment is no longer making sense. And he asks, why would this idea of a mind or a body or a me acquiring this sort of control be so unconvincing? And this is at the heart of all of these non-dual teachings. A non-dual perspective is a simple acknowledgement of what our experience actually is. Now, our basic experience of existence, whether we want to acknowledge it or not, is that it's simply the event of this moment presenting itself. Now, ultimately, the quickest way to acknowledge this, and this is only if you're interested, is to sit down and make no effort at all. Because this non-dual perspective is saying, ultimately, there is a totally unformed, unexplainable happening, just happening all on its own, and everything is an expression of that. And that includes everything that we are. The entire process that we are is simply the automatic expression of this larger, mysterious event of the moment. Now, how would we test that? How would we find out if that was true? The most direct way of testing it is to sit down and make no effort to do anything at all. And if you sit down and you make no effort to do anything at all, and the moment makes itself obvious, there is what we generally call seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking, all the mental activities, there is this large event of this moment. Now, you don't have to call it anything. You don't have to try to make it happen. You don't have to try to understand it as anything. And the whole thing will happen on its own. The vibrations, the pulsations, the breath coming and going, the heart beating, the moods mooding, the thoughts thinking, the various urges rising up, some of them not so strong. Eventually they will be strong enough to make the body move. You will go to the toilet. You will go get something to eat. You will go outside and associate with your friends. You will work if you need to work. All of this will happen all on its own. It is a compelled expression. So this is a very simple acknowledgement of what we are. We haven't created our body, we haven't created our brain, we didn't create our basic needs, our interests, our concerns, we don't create our basic abilities, and we don't create our lack of abilities, we don't create the urges that arise, We don't create the urges that are strong enough to provoke an apparent action. All of this is simply the unexplainable dance of existence. The push of existence. The happening, the liveliness. Like the moving of a cloud, like the moving of an ocean, the surging of an ocean, like the flowing of a river. This great mysterious event expressing itself. Now, it's a very simple acknowledgement, and if you truly acknowledge that at some point, then all of the stories about form and all of the stories about us being in charge of the moment, those are ultimately realized to be false. That when this event first apparently expressed itself or presented itself, there wasn't any storyline, and any of the storylines that we've apparently gathered over the years are simply labels attached to forms that don't exist, and these labels are simply meaningless sounds attached to forms that don't actually exist, then these storylines ultimately don't make any sense. And the notion that we're doing any of it doesn't really make any sense. And so very naturally, someone who's acknowledged this in a very clear way, if they're told that they're now supposed to develop the feeling that they're in total charge of the moment, that's not going to make any sense whatsoever. It's just a very straightforward fact. It won't make any sense. Now, within the world of apparent form and within the world of apparent storylines, to take on this belief that we can move the energies around us, that we can uproot the energies of another person, to take on that belief, apparently, allows us to do certain things that maybe we wouldn't ordinarily be able to do. Perhaps we take on a confidence in a certain situation. Apparently we take on a confidence in a certain situation. But, from this non-dual perspective, it may ultimately be too much of a conflict to try to convince yourself that you're this separate person in charge of the moment, when you're most basic acknowledgement of life is that it's a totally mysterious event simply happening on its own. Now, for some apparent people, maybe it's possible to kind of play with this storyline of being somebody in charge and have this deeper acknowledgement that all of that is fantasy. In others, maybe it won't be possible. And in which case you might flip over more to a kind of Bruce Lee exploration of your particular martial arts style. We have this very famous individual, Bruce Lee, that developed his own style of martial arts. And his whole approach was not convincing himself to be something that he wasn't, but the whole approach was to explore possibilities. And so he ultimately broke down any particular style that he was taught into the most basic movements of the human body within a martial arts situation. And so his was always a questioning, an exploring of what's possible within that situation. And whatever was simply offered to him as a tradition, he would no longer simply accept it. Instead, he would explore the situation, discover what was most direct, what was most effective, and work with that. As this person points out, everything around us seems to promote this project of levels and achieving more and more highly or more and more deeply And as he puts it, as you say, a completely compelled world. But if there is no intrinsic meaning in any of it, it has to be a pantomime and we're all a bunch of fools. I wouldn't say it's that we're all a bunch of fools. It's simply, you know, the word fool, the notion that we're a bunch of fools is also a fantasy. There's just a totally mysterious happening presenting itself in the way that it presents itself, and it may have presented this person who wrote in as someone who totally believed the storylines for a while, and now it's presenting this individual as someone who apparently doesn't believe the storylines so much, and so there's now an apparent conflict with the apparent storylines. But really, all of that's a story too. There is simply totally this unexplainable happening the way it happens. Now, it simply presents each apparent person in whatever way it presents that person. Ultimately, this event has nothing to do with people being fooled, or it has nothing to do with any kind of confusion or clarity. It's not about people moving from ignorance to enlightenment. All of those are fantasies as well. It's just fundamentally a totally unexplainable happening, doing what it does. Now, if within the world of apparent form and storyline, it seems as though you're someone who has come to realize this great unformed event, and it's bringing up a certain amount of conflict with the usual storylines, that will play out in whatever way it plays out. Again, from this non-dual perspective, to acknowledge the totally unexplainable happening of the moment is a very simple, straightforward acknowledgement. And in that acknowledgement, all of the stories about being a person or a mind or a body or a that's developing control, or that has any basic control in the first place, this becomes ultimately a fantasy. And there's, once you've acknowledged the totally unformed, unexplainable happening that this moment is, it's totally impossible to go back into believing the idea of a mind or a body that's separate from the event, a mind or a body that's ultimately in control. However, it can be acknowledged that perhaps you're someone expressed in a certain way, in which you're drawn to a particular practice such as Tai Chi, and within that practice there are these certain conventions, and even though the conventions are not ultimate reality, they are the apparent conventions of that tradition. And maybe it's possible to simply work with them as conventions. They're not reality, they never will be reality, and in fact they contradict your essential feeling of reality. But within this apparent world of Tai Chi, they still are the conventions, and we can look at those conventions, the notion of influencing the energies of another person or the world around us, we can just see this as perhaps a tool for relating to the event of the moment, even though it's not absolute reality. Anyway, that's all that's coming up in response to this question, so let's move on to the next. So, a fourth note has come in, reading, "Good morning, Daryl. I have been wrestling with a small niggle for some time now, It seems to have gotten louder since listening to and reading your words. I completely agree that all of existence is movement, and everything is in a constant state of flux and change, and that existence is expressing itself in each moment through these body minds we call ourselves. However, my experience seems to point to something that is not a thing, but is unchanging and rock solid. Now, I know you have been asked this type of question before regarding the nature of this, and I also know that whatever this is completely beyond any description, but there is a bit of a disconnect here, if you will. Ramesh Balsekar was constantly referring to consciousness at rest and consciousness in motion, and that they are not separate. Consciousness, or the Great Spirit, or Tao, or God, is all there is, and I am that. Anthony Muji, also says that upon awakening, his impression is that everything is a movement against a background of unchanging awareness. Who I am is that unchanging awareness. My question is, who are you? Warm regards. Okay. All right. So basically, in this question, this individual is saying that he completely agrees that all of existence is movement, and that everything is in a constant state of flux and change, and that existence is expressing itself in each moment through these body minds we call ourselves. So with that line, I just want to point out that I never say that this moment is expressing itself through these body minds, because ultimately there are no body minds. This totally unformed, unexplainable event of the moment is expressing itself sometimes as an apparent body or mind, but it's not expressing itself through any body or mind. However, this person is saying that his or her experience seems to point to something that is not a thing, but is unchanging and rock solid. Now, he points out that Ramesh Balsekar was constantly referring to consciousness at rest and consciousness in motion. And Muji speaks about movement against a background of unchanging awareness. So, within this question, it's saying that all of the descriptions are ultimately false. However, there is this one description that somehow seems to be true. And that's not the case. This whole notion that there is movement against a background of unchanging awareness, or consciousness at rest and consciousness in motion, all of that is still within the storyline. Now, this person is ultimately asking, who are you? And he's asking me what my sense of me actually is. So, who am I? So the word I is simply a pointer. Now, within the world of relative storylines, if I talk about something out there, I'm pointing away from this apparent body, and if I speak of I, it seems as though this is pointing back towards this apparent body. The whole happening of the moment is a totally unexplainable happening. It's not necessary to call it anything at all, and the whole thing simply happens. It makes itself obvious. There's no way of saying anything at all about this event. There's just this happening. So whether there's this apparent pointing away from an apparent body or an apparent pointing towards an apparent body doesn't really matter. Ultimately, there's simply an event, the happening of this moment. Now, Even to say that it's a happening is to say too much. It's just, there's just this doing what it does. Now, if somebody sincerely says, who am I, or asks me, who am I, there isn't any response to that. There isn't, if I was to sit here and say, who am I? The question makes no sense. There's just this happening of this moment. There's no way of saying anything about it, truly. There seems to be all kinds of ways of saying, of giving it description and talking about all kinds of storylines, but there's no feeling that any of those storylines is a truth in any way whatsoever. So if I am to ask, who am I, and sincerely want an answer to that, there isn't any answer to that. There isn't any movement of thought. The question brings all thought to a total end. Who am I? There's just this. Now, people will talk about movement against a background of unchanging awareness, but let's just get down to the basic fact of this moment. What we call awareness is the feeling that something is happening in this moment. And if there is a focus on any of the apparent forms of this moment, we call that an object of awareness. But it's the same happening. So there's just this happening. And in one apparent moment, we're calling it awareness. And in another apparent moment, we're calling it the object of awareness. But it's the same happening. It's the same event. It's not divided into two different things. And these words are just gibberish. Awareness is gibberish. I mean, it's a meaningless sound. Object of awareness, that's a meaningless sound. It only takes on meaning by getting attached to certain apparent forms, and those forms don't actually exist. Ramesh Balsekar was referring to consciousness at rest and consciousness in motion, and if I remember correctly in reading some of his stuff, consciousness in motion would be the event of this moment, the feeling that something is happening in this moment. But he would also bring in the fact that tonight, or in the night, the feeling that something is happening doesn't exist. That there is no feeling of existence. We call that sleep. But basically, it's the fact that the whole feeling of existing just disappears. Now, he would be pointing out that the fundamental fact of existence is existing just as much when there isn't any feeling of something happening as it does when it feels as though something is happening. So in this moment, it feels as though there's existence. When we are apparently sleeping, there isn't a feeling of something existing, but the fact of existence, the bottom line, is that whatever this is, it sometimes presents itself as feeling as though it exists, as though there is existence, and sometimes it presents itself as no feeling of existence. Whatever the fact is whatever this is that contains both the feeling of existing and the feeling that there isn't any existence, or the absence of any feeling of existence. That's the big picture. So a particular parent teacher like Balsekar would point out that, yeah, in this moment, existence has this basic feeling of being, but be careful with defining it in that way as well, because at some point there won't be this feeling of being, and then there will be a feeling of being, and then there won't be a feeling of being. And that the actual event that existence is, the actual presence that existence is, contains both of these impressions. And it is ultimately neither one of these impressions because it doesn't have a particular form. Whatever it seems to be is always moving on to present as something else. Ultimately, asking the question, who am I, makes no sense whatsoever because there isn't any actual response to that that can be a true response. And the question itself becomes nonsensical. Who am I? Well, the word I is simply a pointer. It has no particular meaning. It can't point to anything definable, so we can do away with the word I. Who am? Well, the word am. Isness, being, there is no being. Whatever seems to exist is always on its way to something else. So there's nothing that ever comes to actually be long term. So there is no amness or isness long term. So we can drop the word am. So then there's the question who. And the word who has no intrinsic meaning. There's no intrinsic response to that, so that can disappear too. So that's the ultimate sense of this question, who am I? However, on a day-to-day basis, if you want to sit around and talk about stories, we can do that if you want. There's no particular point to my walking around, walking through the apparent world telling everybody, oh, why ask the questions? And, you know, there's no sense talking about this. Even if the stories are not ultimate truth, these apparent stories are still very much part of life and we can play with them. They ultimately mean nothing. The particular storylines that apparently arise in this moment, in my apparent process, this is a totally mysterious event. It's just playing out the way it plays out. And that's all that's arising in relation to this question. So we'll move on to the next. A last person has written in saying, Daryl, I hope you are well and that the tour of California was lots of fun. I'm afraid I've got another question. They still seem to keep coming each month. It has to do with the universe. Yes, a biggie. Basically, how do we know that existence, the universe, will not have an end? I remember in one of your question and answers, a few months back, in response to a question about death, you replied that we do not have a sense that existence has an end. But I wonder, just because we don't have a sense that the universe will have an end, it doesn't then follow that it will not have an end. In the same way that we have a sense of free will, it doesn't necessarily follow that free will is real. Or am I barking up the wrong tree altogether? When you refer to a universe, are you actually referring to a universe outside of myself that may or may not have an end, and also a beginning, and whose dance may or may not continue endlessly? Or are these non-dual teachings partly about easing us away from these questions? I'd be grateful if you could clarify. Basically, I'm confused as to whether you are proposing something which is not based purely on immediate experience. For example, that the universe does not have an end. For that is something that seems to be an imposition of thought rather than based simply on immediate experience. But if that's the case, then yes, how does one overcome the fear of death if we don't actually know that the dance of which we are an expression will not have an end? Thanks so much. All right. I can't remember the exact response that I gave to a question about death a few months back, but I probably did not say exactly that we don't have the sense that existence has an end. Or if I did, I probably attempted to clarify that when we think of existence, or we think of the universe itself, like in my own particular case, notions of beginnings and endings, somehow they don't seem to relate to the universe. The universe just seems too big to consider in terms of a beginning or an ending. The universe, to me, is everything. It's the undivided turning. I mean, again, the word universe literally means undivided turning. So, universe is simply the event of this moment. Whatever's being expressed in this moment, it's just this happening. This has no particular form. And at a certain point in an acknowledgement of this unexplainable happening of the moment, notions like beginnings and endings, all the notions of form, these just don't make any sense whatsoever. So it becomes more obvious that whatever this is, whatever this happening of the moment is, it can't be considered in terms of beginnings and endings. So there's just no longer any interest in those considerations. So it's not about making some definitive statement that there is a universe and it absolutely has no ending. It's just a movement into the obvious and totally unexplainable happening of the moment. Or it's not even a movement into that. It's just an acknowledgement that this is all that exists, a totally unexplainable happening. And so the frustrated attempt to explain it in terms of form, to explain it in terms of beginnings and endings, that just becomes gibberish. So that there is only a totally unexplainable happening. Now, this person has ultimately asked, how does one overcome the fear of death if we don't actually know that the dance of this great mysterious happening will not have an end? So, I'm not offering you the chance to overcome the fear of death. I'm not saying there's any particular outcome to this perspective at all. And actually, I would like to ask a question of all of you. Like, where did you get the idea that we were supposed to overcome all fear? You know, why would we want to overcome the fear of death if on a daily basis the only thing that ultimately keeps us from walking in front of a car, an automobile, or the only thing that prevents us from avoiding any dangerous situation is this basic fear of death? Why would we want to overcome the fear of death? Or if we have absolutely no understanding of what any of this is and we acknowledge that we're not doing any of it, why would we be walking around thinking that we're supposed to overcome certain portions of it? That it's not supposed to be a certain way? Why would we have those questions? Why would we have that inclination? Now, ultimately, that also would be simply an expression of this great mysterious event. Both the fear and the urge to overcome the fear, all of that would be this totally mysterious event that we're not doing. We're simply an expression of it. A non-dual perspective is not offering you the chance to turn your life into a constantly golden glowing event. It's not offering anyone the chance of having all of humankind join hands and sing the same song of love and peace. It's not offering you the possibility of overcoming what we call fear. It's simply an acknowledgement that whatever this is a totally unexplainable event that's happening automatically, that there isn't anyone in charge of that. Whatever you apparently are doing in any apparent moment is not ultimately your doing. You're one of the compelled movements of this great mysterious event. And it's going to move in whatever way it moves. So this acknowledgement, this apparent realization, is not offering anyone the chance to just get rid of all fear, to get rid of all of discomfort. It's not offering the possibility of moving life towards some golden glowing moment. It's simply the ongoing acknowledgement that whatever this is totally on automatic. There's no way of saying what it is. It's simply a dance of passing appearances. Even that is to say too much. And it will play out in whatever way it plays out, so that there is the acknowledgement that what we call fear and what we call discomfort, these are all natural expressions of what we might call the divine dance, the divine event, the divine presence, the divinely mysterious dance, the divinely mysterious presence, the divinely mysterious event that so-called existence is. It's the acknowledgement that those moments of relaxed confidence and those moments of hysterical fear, both of those are the natural expression of this greater dance. Those moments of incredible discomfort and the moments of incredible ease, all of this is the natural expression of this greater mysterious dance. Someone with this non-dual perspective, you know, someone like Ramana Maharshi, they didn't feel at ease because all difficulty was removed, they didn't feel at ease because all difficulty was removed. They were totally at ease because any apparent difficult situation was acknowledged as the natural expression of life. And that the expression of life was ultimately a totally mysterious, automatic event, moving and shifting like the movement of a cloud, like the movement of an ocean, like the movement of the wind. And that each of us is like that movement of the wind. It simply blows wherever it blows. It blows this way and that way, automatically. We are not ultimately in charge of that movement. We are simply an expression of that movement, a portion of that movement, simply happening the way it happens. So that brings us to the end of any of the questions that were sent in this month. But I want to make comment on something at this point. During this trip to California, in certain instances, I was speaking to groups of people that had been exploring a non-dual perspective for 20 years, 30 years, and I was left with the impression that these people were still waiting for some golden moment when their whole approach to life was going to shift, that somehow they were never going to have any feeling of discomfort, they were never going to have any feeling of confusion, that, you know, I was also definitely left with the impression that whoever they were studying with was offering them certain practices in order to perfect themselves. And that left me somewhat confused because when I originally started expressing this perspective, I didn't really call it a non-dual perspective. And the apparent non-dual community of people in the world quickly labeled what I was saying as a non-dual perspective, which was fine because in my apparent reading of non-duality and the classic expressions of non-duality, things like the Ashtavakra Gita and the teachings of people such as Nisargadatta Maharaj, specifically in the time just before his death, his expression I would consider to be a very classic non-dual expression. I mean, what I was saying would generally fit within that very classic non-dual expression, but the more I'm exposed to the general non-dual community in the world, I'm beginning to wonder whether what I'm saying would belong to that expression at all, because I'm not offering anybody any particular practice to perfect themselves, and I don't see any what would be called a classic non-dual perspective. I don't see that offering anybody the opportunity to perfect themselves. So there seems to be some confusion around this non-dual perspective, and there seem to be situations where people are being given this mixed message. One portion of it is saying we're all a portion of the dance of the universe, and another segment is saying, but you really have to work hard to perfect yourself, and here are some practices to perfect yourself, and maybe you want to spend each and every moment observing each and every thought in order to overcome all of your defilements. And that mixed message is not a non-dual perspective. So there seems to be some confusion. I mean, it's quite fine. I mean, basically a non-dual perspective, the classic sense of that is saying that perhaps we can all acknowledge, or many of us can acknowledge, that there is a totally unexplainable happening, that life is a totally unexplainable happening. It is the happening of this moment. This happening has no particular form, and it is happening automatically. It is moving and shifting like the movement of the wind, or the flowing of a river, or the movement of a cloud, or the surging tides and currents of an ocean. It is simply moving and shifting to its own nature. It has no particular form. There's no way of explaining what it is in any way whatsoever. It's happening automatically, and everything that we are is simply an expression of that. Perhaps we can all agree on that, but within this group of apparent people that agree on this, each of us is expressed in a very different way. So within this world of apparent form, no two forms are identical, in the same way that no two snowflakes are identical, or no two leaves are identical, no two anything are identical. So even though there is this group of people that can perhaps agree that life is a totally unexplainable, unformed happening, each apparent person is expressed in a slightly different way. So some people will want to monitor each and every mood, each and every thought. There will be this urge to approach life in this way, in an attempt to explore possibilities within that. However, there will be other apparent people that will have no interest in that whatsoever. There will be simply the unexplainable happening of the moment, and whatever presents itself is fine, and there is no strong urge to define it. There is no strong urge to explore it through the various storylines. And in both cases, there can be this ultimate acknowledgement that life is this totally unexplainable happening, but on an apparent day-to-day basis, the way we seem to be living is very, very different. And that's totally fine. That's also very much an acknowledgement of this non-dual perspective. However, it's not the non-dual perspective to say that this is a totally unformed, inexplicable event that no one is in charge of. However, everyone has to work really hard to overcome their defilements in order to perfect themselves as human beings. That's not the non-dual perspective. And if this non-dual perspective arises, there cannot be the feeling that you have any ultimate control over how you're expressed. There may be an urge on a day-to-day basis to explore the world of apparent thought. There may be the urge to explore the world of apparent emotion. But all of that will ultimately be felt to be a totally mysterious event, simply happening the way it happens. And it won't be offering the possibility of ultimate control. It won't be approached with the notion of, I have some influence here and I will perfect myself ultimately. I will be this perfected human being. It would be more a matter of, all of this is a totally unexplainable event. There is this urge to notice apparent thoughts and notice apparent moods and to explore that and to explore possibilities that life is presenting, but it will ultimately be felt to be the presentation of life and not our doing. So, I'm just wanting to make this very clear that in this, what's being offered here for your consideration, it's not ever offering you the chance to overcome the difficulties of life. It's simply offering the possibility of acknowledging that life has difficulty, and that's part of its natural expression. It's not offering you the chance to model yourself after some idealized notion of perfection. It's saying that ultimately each and every apparent human being in any moment has to be exactly what they are in that moment, and that is automatically moving on to something else, and that we're not in charge of that. That apparent human being presenting in a certain way and moving on to some other presentation, that apparent form that's moving and shifting and changing, is a totally unexplainable happening. It has no particular form. And it's simply happening automatically, moving and shifting and dancing. If there seemed to be an apparent time when it was very confused, an apparent person who's very confused, that's not the doing of that apparent person. And if at another point it seems as though it's an apparent person who's had a realization about the greater mysterious dance of the moment, that's not the doing of that apparent person either. The whole thing is a totally unexplainable, mysterious event. This acknowledgement is offering perhaps the possibility of acknowledging that all of it is a gift. You know, it's not a matter of saying, oh, I've done a really good job to get my life to go in this direction, but I've really kind of screwed up in some of these other areas, and I need to work harder over here. It's the acknowledgement that whatever has happened, both the apparent good and the apparent bad, all of that is a divinely mysterious event. And in a way, we could say all of it is a gift, but actually, there isn't any gift, there isn't any giving, and there isn't any giver. And there isn't anybody to receive the gift. There's just this totally mysterious happening. You know, many non-dual teachers will say there's just this passing parade of appearances, a magical dance of passing appearances. And perhaps that's a way of making this more palatable, to see it as a magical dance of passing appearances. But the fact remains that that acknowledgement is not offering anybody ultimate control over their life. It's simply presenting the possibility of acknowledging that whatever good things seem to have happened, whatever wonderful abilities we seem to have, that has never been our doing. And all of those moments of conflict and confusion and despair, that's also not our doing. This is simply the full dance of existence, the full expression of this great mysterious event. There's one Taoist teaching that simply states that a sage, someone who's very wise, someone who has acknowledged this larger event of existence, doesn't run around worrying about all of the events of life. That basically a sage simply awaits the decrees of heaven. Now, that's their way of saying that this event of existence, all that's happening, is simply moving and shifting to its own inherent nature. We could call it the laws of nature, but there's no way of saying what any of that actually is. It's just existence moving to its own inherent nature. Those would be the decrees of heaven. The basic nature of existence is moving all things, all apparent things. And so someone who's awake to that, someone who acknowledges that, simply rests as a portion of the event, knowing that whatever urges they have to participate in life in any way whatsoever, those most essential urges are not their doing. That is the movement of existence. And so there's an ultimate resting as a portion of this event, knowing that there's no way to go the wrong direction. There's no way of being the wrong expression. There is simply the expression of life. Now, in that, it's not saying that it's always going to be pleasant. It's not saying there will never be what we call fear or confusion or anxiety or sorrow. It's simply saying that all of that is the natural dance of existence. In the same way that the joys and the clarities and those moments of feeling as though we're just one small portion of the ocean, the dance, all of that is the natural expression of whatever this is. So there's a very natural resting with the event. if I remember correctly, D.H. Lawrence had a poem called Pax. Actually, just let me pause this and go get that poem. Okay, got it. D.H. Lawrence had a poem titled Pax, basically meaning peace. And it goes this way. All that matters is to be at one with the living God, to be a creature in the house of the God of life, like a cat asleep on a chair, at peace, in peace, and at one with the master of the house, with the mistress, at home in the house of the living, sleeping on the hearth and yawning before the fire, sleeping on the hearth of the living world, yawning at home before the fire of life, feeling the presence of the living God like a great reassurance, a deep calm in the heart, a presence as of the master sitting at the board in his own and greater being in the house of life. Now this to me is a great expression of the feeling of peace that comes from this acknowledgement of the event of life, the God of life, the living God, a presence. And what you're left with in that acknowledgement, knowing that each and every one of us is a portion of this greater mysterious dance, this greater experience, this greater mysterious expression, basically you end up with the same kind of impression of, or the same feeling of a cat asleep on a chair in the house of its master or its mistress, at home in the house of the living, sleeping on the hearth and yawning before the fire. So, you know, he likens the acknowledgement of the living God, the great mysterious happening of this moment, the great mysterious presence. He likens that acknowledgement, you know, that great mysterious presence is likened to a warm cottage and the fireplace within the warm cottage. And to be someone who's acknowledged this greater presence is to be like a cat sleeping in front of the fire in this warm cottage, feeling safe, feeling confident, knowing that whatever this is, we're a portion of it, this greater mysterious event, this greater mysterious presence. Now, ultimately, this is the acknowledgement that we're not in charge, that it's simply going to play out the way it plays out, and that it plays out both with apparently wonderful moments and other moments that are not so wonderful. Moments of confidence, moments of insecurity, moments of clarity, moments of confusion, moments of joy, moments of sorrow. All of this is the natural dance of life. So that brings us to the end of this month's response. As always, whatever I've presented here is simply for your consideration. If you are having difficulty relating to some of my responses, you might want to listen once again to the two basic talks on this website. One is called An Overview of Spiritual Awakening, and the other is called Acknowledging the Moment. You can listen to those only if you're interested. I'm not saying that anyone else has to see life in this particular way. I'm not saying that anybody else has to agree with this perspective. All of this is simply for your consideration. So as always, till next time, I hope that life offers you wonderful things. However, I know it's going to offer a mixed bag of things. That's the way it is. So till next time, take care. Bye.